All right, so this is the drill today with Mr. Oster. He's got a special guest coming up shortly and then another guest. So we're going to kind of save your calls for the latter part of the program today. Lots of information to get to. And the good information to begin the hour, as always on this program, is the opportunity to win a $25 gift certificate to Sorgles out in Wexford. So make it the 10th caller at 412-922-1020, and you'll be the winner. And then we've got that Janoski's gift certificate to give away as well. And today is day two of Pumpkin Land. So it's a very nice day, but it's always a better day when I say, here he is, the host of The Organic Gardener, Doug Oster, DougOster.com.
Good morning. Well, last week I was searching for a woman who brought me pawpaws at Hahn, and she reached out, Julie reached out to me last Sunday, and yesterday I had one of the most wonderful days. This is why I love doing what I do. And so I went to Julie's place, and she had a nice stand of pawpaw trees. So pawpaws, and I talk about them all the time, it's a native fruit that settlers learned about from indigenous Americans. And when I went to her place, there were hundreds already on the ground. And I was shaking the tree. That's how they come down. Almost got hit in the head by this big, by almost the size of a potato. And then I spent the day driving around giving them away to every place I could think of that would want them. I love people to try pawpaws and hopefully grow them. I'm saving seeds from this one. Everybody agrees this was the sweetest pawpaw they'd ever tasted. And so I was sending, going to all my, I went to Hahn Nursery, Best Feeds, I went to Hastings Hardware, those guys always helped me out. Where else? Oh, just all over. Stopped at Hal's Bar and Grill and Hal's Bottle Shop, left some there for the people there, my friends there. And so I was also driving around. I had wild mushrooms. I have a friend that loves this one wild mushroom called Chicken of the Woods. Now, just a warning about mushrooms. Don't mess with mushrooms if you don't know what you're doing, because you could kill yourself. Okay, so I know what this Chicken of the Woods looks like. She knows what it looks like. And so I was taking that to her along with some pawpaws. And then I took another pepper over to Hot Pepper Dave's house for a test to see how hot it was. I have been having a ball with these really hot peppers that I got at Sorgles. I saw Braden just the other day when I was stopped by Sorgles, and we were talking peppers. So this is one I gave our old friend Jessica Walliser, and happy birthday to Jessica Walliser. Tomorrow's her birthday, but it's called Jess's Purple Peach. And it's about a 3-inch long crinkly pepper. Some people say it looks like a caterpillar, and it starts purple, and then it changes to like a peach color. And I didn't, it was on the tag, it said 100,000 Scovilles, and that's not very hot for the super hot pepper people. But when Dave bit into it, it was even worse than the last one, which is supposed to be a million Scovilles. So this one was even hotter, and watching him eat a little bit at a time was wild. I have some of the other super hot ones. I'm doing a fishing trip today, and I got that for my fishing buddy. But I'm just so relieved to get a little bit of rain. Not enough, but I'll take it. And I hope this just continues, the slow rain continues throughout the week. It opened up another planting window for me, but when I was digging in the soil, it's really dry down there. You get a couple inches down below, and it's really dry. So if you're doing any planting like I am, you still have to water. And so besides what I planted in the ground, I started some flats of arugula, lettuce, some bunching onions, an interesting bunching onion that I've had those seeds for a while. You're supposed to use fresh seeds for the onions. We'll see how they do. Mustard greens, which I love mustard greens. These are all things that love cool weather, and it's not too late to start this. Now, I've put a bunch of plants in of this sort of thing too, and I actually bought some turnips when I stopped at Best Feeds the other day, big white turnips, and so they're ready to go. I'm going to split those up and plant those tomorrow. But there was two unique things I started seeds from, and I've talked about them before. One is called Hamburg rooted parsley. And it's a really old vegetable from the 1700s. It grows something like a carrot underneath, but it's white. So kind of cross between a carrot and a parsnip. It loves cold weather, but the tops are edible. The tops are like a very sweet parsley. And so I'll get it going. I'll put them in the garden, you know, maybe in a month. And then those roots will grow down below, but I'll get the parsley up above. And then next spring, they'll be ready to go. They're doing a thing. The other thing I'm growing is called corn mache. I think I'm saying that right. Sometimes I call it corn salad. Now, this is another thing you could find seeds from. It has to have cold weather. It can't grow in warmth. And I've grown this before out in the garden without protection, and it has to get really cold for this to freeze out. It will freeze, and then it will basically reconstitute with a thaw. And again, these are things that I'm extending the season. And right now, the winters have been starting so slow. We can get all this stuff in the ground set up as maybe your peppers are coming out, maybe your tomatoes are coming out and they're tired. Now, out in the garden, I planted my bargain lilies. First off, I got a truckload of compost, which was great. And then I planted my bargain lilies, which I got for like $2 a piece, a native clematis called Clematis Virginiana, I think it is, and then some smooth hydrangeas. So smooth hydrangeas, if you want a reliable bloomer, anything from that family, that one and that one alone, you could cut it to the ground, it would come back and bloom for you. But then something new that was sent to me by Proven Winners, and it's called Aronia, and it's chokeberry is the common name. It's a small native shrub. I had to plant this stuff inside the fenced-in vegetable garden because the deer would get this. Now, I don't know anything about Aronia or growing chokeberry. I did a garden consult, I think it was 2 weeks ago. They're growing lots of chokeberries. So it's a small native. We'll check it out, see how it does. We've got guests coming up. My friend Laura Schock from Phipps is going to talk all about the Fall Flower Show when we come back.
All right, back with more in a moment. All right, as the curtain comes up for segment number two of The Organic Gardener with your host, Doug Oster, DougOster.com. It's our first of two guests this Sunday morning. Doug?
Well, I'm excited to welcome Laura Schock to the show. She's from Phipps. She's a senior plant procurement, plant records, and design associate. Laura, that's quite a title.
Yeah, it is. I didn't make it up.
So. I know. Laura and I have been friends for a long time. She's been at Phipps since 2005, and she's been designing the fall show since 2010. This year's fall flower show has me very intrigued, Laura. Rhythm and Blooms. Tell me about this.
So most people love music, right, Doug?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you and I love music, right?
You definitely.
So by definition, it has a lot of emotion to it, so do plants. So I thought this would be a great pairing for a fall show.
Talk a little bit about the genesis of this, and I know you work on this for a year in advance. Talk a little bit about coming up with this combination and how it manifests itself. The show opens Saturday, right?
Correct, coming Saturday.
So how did it get started when you were thinking about this a year ago?
So when we pitch a show, we generally come up with a couple ideas, and we get all of our departments together and talk about what would be possible for a fall show. And for this year, I wanted to do one of the themes that I pitched was using music as a way of using a theme. So everyone loves music, so we decided to go with that theme and use a bunch of different types of genres of music to kind of include everyone.
So what will I see when I walk in to the palm court?
You're going to see a jazz club sort of set up in deep, rich colors of reds and purples. And we have a fountain that was created from our staff. Paul Wydeck is an amazing person who makes these fountains and all kinds of props. And he made a piano from scratch into a fountain. So you're going to see water cascading over some keys, and you're going to see all kinds of beautiful blooms in red and purple.
Oh, man, that sounds awesome. That's just the first room.
Yeah, that's just the first room.
I love I love the props. You know, I love the flowers. I love the design, what you do, but I also love the props. And that one sounds amazing. So what are the different genres of music that we're going to combine the flowers with?
So you have a room of rock, Appalachian folk, jazz is going to be in the palm court, reggae, and hip hop. So there's a little bit for everyone.
That is awesome. Tell me a little bit about the fun of putting something like this together.
This is probably the most rewarding part of the whole thing is picking out the plants. So with this theme, you kind of want to pick out plants that are like in the rock room, a little wild and dark, and then other rooms like the sultry colors of the reds and the purples for the jazz. We have classical, so there's a lot of light colors in there. And the Appalachian folk is a lot of more traditional colors. So it's a lot of fun.
So with the show opening on Saturday, what is your week like before the opening?
Just making sure the last two rooms get installed and all the little details go into fruition. So everything has to be finished up.
Now, the thing about the fall show is it only runs for 3 weeks. So if you're going to go, you better get there, right?
Yep, it only goes until the 27th of October, and so that's only 23 days. So that's not long. So it's a lot like our spring show. You got to get it while you can. Everything is gorgeous right from the get-go. We're really excited to be showing this to Pittsburghers.
So let's talk a little bit about the plants. Tell me what you're using this year, and I guess let's start with mums. Mums are the traditional fall plant.
Correct. Yeah, mums are the quintessential fall plant. So, yeah, we grow all our specialty mums by our staff. So we have a group of five staff members who take on this task of growing all our disc buds, sprays, and cascades. So these are specially cultivated mums that require special growing techniques in order to get them to do their thing. So, you know, those big, giant flowers that you see in the florist, the disc buds, we call them, mm-hmm. or their another name is exhibition mums. They have a single bloom atop a single stem. So they're trained with stakes in a technique called disc budding. All the side buds and shoots are removed, so all the energy goes into one giant flower. So I think those are some of the most favorite of the, you know, because you don't grow those at home and you don't see them generally. And then we have sprays and cascades. That's another technique that we use to grow those.
The disc buds are just, like you said, you can't grow them at home. It's such a special thing. How do you know the timing? How do you know that the plants are going to be ready for the show? Because with a short window like that, and I'm sure you have to have some in the back that, you know, replace other plants as they fade. I'm assuming you do, but how do you get the timing right?
So mums are daylight responsive plants. So what we call a short day plant. They bloom in response to shorter days and longer nights. So we can play with that a little bit by giving them black cloth treatment. So we close up the windows on our greenhouses to give them that treatment. So we give them 14 hours of darkness and 10 hours of daylight, and they send out buds in response to this. So we can actually time the mums to be perfectly timed for the opening of the show. And ours is generally earlier than most shows around the country. So we have really made an art form of that technique.
Got about a minute left. Talk about seeing the visitors and how they react to what you've put together.
I think that's probably, even after the creation of everything and putting things together, I think that's the most rewarding part, is seeing the joy on people's faces, seeing that they're relaxed in the space of FIPS. It really is a jewel to have a place where people can come and just relax and see something different. And it's just really great. I love my job.
Oh, that's awesome. And you can get tickets through the website, right?
Tickets through the website. We're open Monday through Thursday from 9:30 to 5. And then on Fridays, we're open 9:30 to 10. So you get to see it at night, which is really kind of unique because they put a lot of different lights on things. And then Saturday and Sunday, of course, the same time, 9:30 to 5 p.m.
Laura, thank you. Thank you so much for getting up early. Well, you're an early riser anyway, but thank you so much. It was great to talk to you. And all the information about the show is also at DougOster.com. You can learn all about the show and how Laura put it together.
All right, stay with us. Who's coming up after the news?
Well, it's Dr. Michelle Duenas from St. Vincent College. She is doing something very interesting called the Spotted Lanternfly Invasion Archive, and you can help her with the research by just catching a few bugs.
I put a hit on about six of them yesterday. So
well, you got to save them. You got to catch them live and put them in. Yeah, that's how we're going
to
do it.
You know that little squeegee you use to clean off your window?
Yep.
They met their demise the Sicilian way. All right, we'll come back. Stay with us. All right, let's make it the 10th caller right now for that gift certificate to Janoski's in Clinton, 412-922-1020.
I'm joined on today's show by Dr. Michelle Duenas. She's an associate professor of biology at St. Vincent College in, I call it La Trobe, but everybody else calls it La Trobe. And she is co-founder of the Spotted Lanternfly Invasion Archive. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me about the Spotted Lanternfly Invasion Archive. How did it begin and what is it?
So this was a project that started as what was supposed to be a small undergraduate research project in the fall of 2021. So I had a student in my research lab, Claire Mulcahy, and she's now studying evolution in Iowa for her PhD, but she wanted to do a project on genetics and insects. And I was like, okay, well, we have to find a bug that you can get lots of so that you can calculate genetic statistics on it. And I was like, there's this bug that's coming that I think we could get a lot of. but Claire didn't have a car at the time. And then with all of my teaching, I was like, I don't think I have time to sample everywhere we want. So let's ask people for help and see if they'll collect them for us. And we found out through that a lot of people were interested in helping contribute to research on spotted lanternfly. And that's when I got the idea of turning it into a long-term project. So Claire's project kind of morphed into like a pilot study to see what we could do with them. And then because I asked my roller derby team to join in, that's how Dr. McDonald got involved because we used to play roller derby together. And so Dr. McDonald was like, well, I would love to do biochemical research on them with my students at Chatham and incorporate it into biochemistry labs. And I was like, okay, let's do this. We're going to try to do a citizen science project where people go out and they collect and kill bugs for us and send them back to us so we can do genetic studies on them.
Well, you know, roller skates would be a good way to kill spotted lanternflies, right?
Yeah, but I think I have definitely run over one with my roller skates and they get stuck to your wheels and it's really gross.
So who can participate in the project?
Anyone it can participate in this. And we're looking for people to collect and we're hoping that people who do sign up and collect for us will participate every year, as long as they can find them on their property. And we don't need many of them. All we're asking for are 5 males and 5 females, which are really easy to identify. The females have a red spot on the tip of their abdomen and the males don't. So we're looking for people to just collect 10 samples total. And then what we do is we send you a kit in the mail. So you can collect them before the kit comes, but we send you the kit in the mail and then you transfer your samples into the tube that we provide you. And then we'll have drop-off locations throughout the 4 counties where people can drop off their samples because we're asking people to preserve them in alcohol, which is flammable and can't be sent through regular mail. So we'll have drop-off locations where people can drop them off.
And tell me the counties.
The counties are Butler, Washington, Allegheny, and Westmoreland County.
And what kind of shape does the spotted lanternfly have to be in when we're collecting it? Is it okay that we step on it, or it has to be some other way?
That's a very good question. A lot of people ask that. We prefer them sacrificed alive. But catching them can be really difficult. But a weird trick that always works with them, and I'm so surprised that this works, is if you just take like an empty like disposable water bottle, or I actually have a whole bunch of mini Gatorade bottles in my car for this. I think they can't see the clear plastic. And so if you put the bottle over them, they'll jump right up into the bottle and you never even have to touch them to collect them. So that's the tip. That was actually a tip I heard from multiple people. We had a grade school teacher who participated with his class last year, and he said he just gave water bottles to all the kids and they caught so many of them.
And come at them from the front. Is that right with that bottle?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You want to come at them from the front. But I found like you don't even really need to finesse it that much. They'll just jump right into the bottle.
And what do you hope to accomplish with the research?
So our project has a long-term goal. As an evolutionary biologist, I've always loved reading about these studies where they like do DNA sequencing on like ancient museum specimens, and then compare it to like what that population looks like now. And I was like, wouldn't it be cool if we had the forethought to start collecting specimens to do that now? So that, you know, 30 years in the future, we can take those and see what their genetic diversity looked like a long time ago. So that's kind of like the long-term goal of this, is to see how spotted lanternfly will change and adapt as it evolves to this area of Western Pennsylvania. We don't know how it will, but we know from a lot of other studies of other invasive insect species that when they land in a new area, they do start to evolve different mechanisms that enable their success there. So we know they probably will, we just don't know how. And that's what I'm really excited to figure out as time goes on. So we're kind of like, that's why we've decided to call it an archive, is it really is like a historical record of their invasion. And I feel like Western Pennsylvania is a perfect place to do this because particularly like Westmoreland, Allegheny County, we have the Laurel Highlands, which climatically can be very, very different from Pittsburgh. You know, I live in Pittsburgh, but I work at St. Vincent. And on any given day, the climate's so different.
What's the best way for people to become part of the project and find out what you're doing?
So people can sign up to get a kit in the mail at slfia.org. We have on there, we have a link you click and you fill out a form and put in your mailing address. And in the next 2 weeks, me and my students at St. Vincent will be furiously making kits to mail out to people. This is kind of exploded. As of today, we have 530 people signed up to participate. So we are like, we are in like emergency mode to make all these kits, but we are so thrilled with the response. So people can still sign up to participate. Once everyone signs up, the next day you'll get an email from me with instructions on how to collect them. So then we'll mail those kits out. And then after we've mailed all the kits out, we'll send out a bunch of drop-off locations in the four counties where people can drop off their samples for us.
Well, Dr. Duenas, thank you very much for coming on the show. And all the information about the Spotted Lanternfly Invasion Archive, you can also find that at DougOster.com. And that'll get you a link to hook up with the project. So thanks again.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So, yeah, just go to DougOster.com. You can find all the information about the Spotted Lanternfly Invasion Archives. And if you want to be part of that, you want to catch some of those and put them in alcohol and then you can drop them off. That would be a great thing to do. It'd be interesting to see how these things evolve. Rob, you said you encountered a bunch of them.
I whacked them. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I've only seen like two or three this entire time we've been talking about them, but I was at a place which will remain nameless, and they were everywhere.
So at my property, they're much less than they were last year, but I was out walking in the woods yesterday, and I saw a big black circle under a tree of heaven. Tree of heaven is that's their number one thing they love to go for. And that stuff, that black, is called sooty mold. And that's what happens. Their excrement is honeydew, which is a sweet liquid. And then when it falls on the ground, it becomes this disgusting sooty mold. Another interesting thing about spotted lanternfly, it can only feed on plants that have what are called positive pressure. So they can't feed on everything. A tree of heaven, when they get to it and they get to the leaves, they can't suck it out. It has to be pushed out. That's why they like Tree of Heaven, grapes, and maples. If you have a maple tree over your deck and you have spotted lanternfly, it's not a good thing. You've got to do something because that sooty mold is disgusting. Now, I think from just looking at what's happened in the East and also interviewing people in the West where the spotted lanternfly invasion is continuing, in the East, it's not a big problem anymore where they had that infestation like we did last year, and some people have it this year, as Rob was talking about. It nature is finding a balance, and things are eating it. I was on the lake the other day, and I saw one just kind of flickering on the water, and I figured, oh, you're gonna be a meal for a bass.
Smorgasbord. There's enough of them. All right, we're going to get a break in here. We'll come back. This is when you get a chance now to talk to Doug about all of your gardening issues, and that fall planting season is upon us. So call us. Number to dial if you want to talk to Doug, 866-391-1020. We're serving up breakfast coming up on the Coons Cooking Hour next hour. Stay with us. All right, here we go. Let's say hi to Ed in McDonald. Ed, you are on KDK with Doug Oster. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call. I have boxwoods and a weeping cherry. When can you trim them?
So those boxwoods, I would wait until in spring when they're in active growth. And actually for the cherry, I would do that as soon as it was done blooming. The thing with the boxwood is we don't want it to push out new growth now because it's too late in the season. That growth can't harden off before winter. Are the boxwoods going nuts, or what's going on with them?
Well, they need trimmed, and then I got two that got like a dead spot. I don't know whether to dig them out and put new ones in, or if I could cut that piece out, or what.
Well, anytime you have deadwood in a plant, that can be removed at any time. So, you want to get the deadwood out of there. The thing with the boxwoods is they took a real beating a couple years ago when we had that polar vortex, and boxwoods were one of the plants that had trouble coming back. There's also something going around called boxwood blight, but if your other boxwoods look okay, that's probably not the issue. The first thing I would do is I would cut out the deadwood, and then in the spring I would do the trimming on the rest of the plants, but I would also fertilize them and see how they respond to fertilization. If they don't bounce back, in that case, I would try and get a certified arborist, like the guys from Davey. They'll come for free, and they can tell you for sure if it's just something that was weather-related or if it's a boxwood blight. All right?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, John's back wanting to talk figs. He's our last call of the day with Doug Oster. Go ahead, John.
What's going on?
Good morning, guys. Hey, Doug, a couple weeks ago, started getting figs, turned purple, soft, excellent. With this gray weather that we've had, they continue to soften but not turn purple. Is that typical?
Mine are still turning purple, but if they soften, I would wait a little bit.
Okay.
And see if you get that purple. Now, I'm picking them a little early. I'm picking them when they get soft, and because when you squeeze them, you can see that little purple at the very bottom, and they'll ripen up too inside after a couple of days. So just wait, see what happens. You just want to get them before the ants get them. Once they turn purple, they get soft real quick, and the ants will, and then they're no good to you.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. Thank you.
All right. Good luck.
All right. Go ahead there, sir. You got 2 minutes. All yours.
All right. I'm going back to England in May. I was actually thinking when I was talking to Laura. Jeez, I'm getting old, Rob. That last time I was in England, I was at the Chelsea Flower Show, and she loves salvia like I love salvia. And I know that she works early in the morning, and so it was later in London, but it was like 6 in the morning here, and I texted her, and I said, oh, this new salvia, this pink Amistad, and I sent her a picture, and so that's funny. So I'm headed back to May, go to the Chelsea Flower Show, tour in London, Westminster Abbey, all these cool gardens. If you're interested in that, just go to DougOster.com. We had a webinar last week, and I've got a lot of people signed up already, but there's plenty of spaces left if you'd like to come. Next week, my guests are Peggy Montgomery from flowerbulbs.com, and next week and then 2 weeks after that, we're giving away every week $100 gift certificate that you can use for bulbs. Also next week, Luke Warner joins us to talk about the power of leaves and how they can help the landscape. I hope he's going to tell me I don't have to rake up all those oak leaves. I walked out to my back patio yesterday, and the oak leaves are already starting to fall. That's my least.
What would you do without a leaf blower? You'd have calluses from raking, but can you imagine where the world would be if we didn't have leaf blowers?
In my case, I'd rather not use the leaf blower. I mean, I need to get an electric one, a rechargeable one, because it's loud and it's pouring out exhaust. But in my situation, to get them just off that long driveway with a switchback in it, to get it off
the battery doesn't work like a battery.
No, it does. Nowadays they do. It's just. This one is still working. It works good. And
the old days, they'd have just put them in the bin and lit the match.
Yeah, I know.
There's nothing like that smell. You can't do it anymore, but that's a nice smell.
That reminds you a lot of fall.
It does.
The smell of fall.
Where'd everybody go? All right, Doug. Listen, have a great day on the lake, as they say.
All right. Remember, organic gardeners, you make our world brighter and safer with each seed you sow and every garden you grow.